the Caribbean sunshine, and I am fully satisfied. Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday. It is the 16th of August. We are midway through the summer month of August, and it's very nice to have you with us on this day. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. Let me introduce everybody just real quick. That was Mississippi Heat you heard. They're playing the Linda, WMC's Performing Arts Studio, tonight at 8 o'clock. You can find out more by going to thelinda.org. Great stuff. Mississippi Heat tonight at the Linda, thelinda.org for more information. We also have a playlist. You can find out all those tracks that we'll be playing throughout the morning on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. If you go to panel at WAMC.org. You can write us a letter. You can share your thoughts on the stories that we are going to discuss. I will admit, as I was putting the stories together and thinking about what we would talk about today, I did write to the group and say, I just can't believe we're talking about any of these. It just feels so weird that any of these are real stories, but they are, and we'll talk about them this morning. Let me introduce the group to you, or at least the people that we have so far in the studio. We begin with Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
I'm
okay. All right.
Pretty good.
We'll take pretty good. That's good. Judith Enk is with us. She is a senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, the founder of Beyond Plastics, and a former EPA regional administrator. Judith Enk, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. I just had about 4 days in the Adirondacks, and I did almost a not entirely, but a bit of a national news detox, and it was very enriching and restorative. I highly recommend it.
So today, now we screw that all up.
Yeah. Last night, I came back and we hit the Northway, and I put on CNN and said to my husband, vacation's over.
Here we go. We're going into it. One of our favorite people on the planet, and we just love when he joins us. Joseph Bruschak is here. He is an author, a poet, a novelist, a storyteller, and a scholar of Native American culture. He is a legend, and we are thrilled that he is with us this morning. Good morning, sir.
Oh, Oleonini Dombach. Thank you, my friend Joe. It's a pleasure to be here. And after this show, I'll be back at my pond up in the Adirondack region watching the dragonflies. Encouraging sanity on the part of everyone I know.
There's nothing wrong with that. We're assuming that David Soares will be with us, the Albany County District Attorney. He confirmed. He wrote to us. We know that he is with us, so we just need him to show up. So we'll assume that happens. We'll see what develops.
Speak of the devil.
As if on cue, David Soares enters the room. How are you, sir? Sit down, say hello.
Too busy dancing to Mississippi Heat.
Too busy dancing to Mississippi Heat. David Soares is in the house again. He is the Albany County District Attorney. Good morning, sir. Very nice to have you with us.
Lots of discussion about the recreational marijuana in Massachusetts. I figured you might have been researching the subject before you send us our list of things to read last night.
I don't even know. I just don't know what to make of any of these
stories.
Welcome
to the bizarro universe.
These are the four stories. The Israel bans lawmakers, although there's an update on that story. July hottest month on record.
Ever recorded.
There's the politically motivated harassment that's taking place in the State Department. And oh yes, the president is interested in buying Greenland. And none of those are jokes.
And away we go.
Let us begin with the story. There, we also should note, just so you know, there are two devices that were apparently found in New York City, pressure cooker type devices, and that is a story that seems to be developing. I don't know if anything will come out of it, but just to know that that's something that we're watching to see what is made of that. But police agencies are on the scene, so we'll see what develops from that story.
Well, pressure cookers don't kill people. It's pressure cooks who kill people.
Yeah, apparently.
Yes.
Hey guys, the CNN is now reporting that two of them were found not to be explosive devices, and they're not pressure cookers, they're rice cookers. I'm not quite sure what the difference between pressure cooker and rice cooker is, but that's the case. The third one is still being investigated.
We'll see, right? So,
Parents all over the Capital District have already called their adult children living in New York City. Two in the Fulton train station subway stop, which is very, very close to World Trade Center, and one in a neighborhood in Chelsea.
So we'll keep an eye on that story. So now we go to the Israel story. Israel now says that a member of Congress can visit to see her grandmother. Two U.S. Congresswomen, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, had been denied entry for an official visit over their support of a boycott movement. The government said on Friday that Ms. Tlaib could enter. This was an announcement that started out yesterday from the Israeli government, and then with great pressure from the president, there was the barring of Representative Tlaib and Representative Omar. "Silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants for me," Ms. Tlaib said of her grandmother. "It would kill a piece of me." The announcement appeared to be a second shift in position by the government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Israeli Interior Ministry initially approved a planned official visit by Ms. Tlaib of Michigan and another Democratic lawmaker, Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. But after a public objection by President Trump, it blocked them, citing their support of an anti-Israel boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Ms. Tlaib had written to the Israeli Interior Minister appealing to be allowed to see her relatives, particularly her 90-year-old grandmother. She lives in a Palestinian village west of Ramallah. "This could be my last opportunity to see her," she wrote on congressional letterhead. "I will respect any restrictions and will not promote boycotts against Israel during my visit." In light of that, the office in Israel said that the minister decided to allow her and expressed hope that she would keep her commitment and that the visit would truly be solely for humanitarian purposes. The developments raised new questions about how Ms. Tlaib's much-anticipated visit would ultimately affect politics in both countries. The relationship has become a divisive campaign issue in both the September 17th election in Israel as well as the 2020 presidential race in the United States.
So now, Joe, for whatever it's worth, she has now said, latest coming up as we speak, she's not going to go. That her grandmother wouldn't want her to do it, so she basically said, I appealed, I wanted to go, but now, under these circumstances, I won't go, leading a lot of people to think that it was all a setup to begin with. However, the U.S. blew it. They knew they blew it. The Israelis knew they blew it. So that's why they changed their mind and said she could come under humanitarian basis. All they had to do, as Mrs. Wick would have said, is to keep shut. Let the two come like everybody else comes. They come. They're not noticed. If they're noticed, it's minimal. Now they've made it into an international thing, and that is on Trump and on Netanyahu. Trump and Netanyahu, of course, are together at the hip, as we say. So this is really turned out to be a major embarrassment.
And again, something that could have been avoided. Ms. Tlaib on Twitter on Friday said, "Visiting my grandmother under these oppressive conditions stands against everything I believe in." And that was the quote I read about, "Silencing me and treating me like a criminal is not what she wants for me. It would kill a piece of me."
Yes, well, but now she says she's not going.
Right.
Yeah. And I was a little surprised this morning, just a few hours ago, when she said she was going and she had agreed to this really disturbing provision that she was not allowed to speak her views about the state of Israel. I thought that was a little odd. So this is flip-flopped again. But my goodness, what a low point for our nation that a president can use his own political disagreements with elected members of Congress. You know, both are the first Muslim women elected to Congress, and get Israel involved in this mess. I mean, where does this end? I mean, if there's a climate change conference in England, does President Trump call Boris Johnson and say, I don't want, you know, maybe someone not as high profile, a member of Congress, block American citizen from international travel? This is really chilling.
I think at this point, in 2019, having lived with this man now for 2+ years, nothing that this man does should surprise any person. Any American. I mean, the idea that people are surprised is just—it's rather laughable. Mm-hmm. I think what's surprising is the reaction of everyone on the other side of him. The ability of this man to convince others to do things that are so incredibly detrimental to their own self-interest. Now, this isn't just about banning and you know, reaching over our over the seas and having a foreign nation. In essence, attack one of our own sitting legislators. This is a whole lot more than that. This is a foreign nation who is dependent and relying upon the assistance of the United States of America and, you know, relationships between the president and its prime minister aside. You need Congress. You need Congress. You are reliant upon Congress. And so the idea that Netanyahu acquiesce to the wishes of this particular president at the risk of alienating a full, you know, what I would say a Congress that seems to be, you know, at least on a bipartisan level, in agreement that this was wrong, right?
Although Netanyahu is up for election again in September, and Trump is very, very popular in Israel.
And we understand.
More than here. And I think he's just like Trump. He's operating out of his own political self-interest.
Short-term political self-interest,
and
long-term
be damned.
Damned, yeah. Right? Yeah.
But it does make Israel look like a puppet state.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, if Donald Trump can say jump and Israel says how high, what does that say to its international reputation?
One other thing, and that is all the polling shows that most Americans are with Israel. I don't know. And therefore, this was such a bad error on the part of the Israelis to do this, because all it did was reinforce anti-Israeli sentiment. Look, we got Marco Rubio on the same side as liberal Democrats.
And AIPAC.
Here. Yes. So they really messed up. That's what this is all about.
Right. Israel truly is a liberal democracy. It's a very interesting place. It has, you don't even have to talk about it having a right to exist. But this takes our conversation in an entirely different direction when you have happens like think this. You know, it's crazy.
As you just said, I mean, we have Israel as a liberal democracy, but we're seeing signs of that liberal democracy slowly encroaching into this, you know, same as here in the United States.
Exactly.
You know, when people talk about constitutional crisis, we don't have a constitutional crisis. What we have is one entire body of Congress that refuses to do its oversight, maintain its oversight responsibilities. And the forefathers could never have envisioned that, boy, if we gave, you know, senators or congressmen power, right? Article 1 powers. If we gave them power, they would just decide that they didn't want it. You could not foresee that.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, if anything, President Trump is consistent. One of his first important international actions was the Muslim travel ban in his first few days of his presidency. Where he's not consistent is attacking these members of Congress, his words, that they're anti-Semitic. And yet, remember, in Charlottesville, when people were marching, Jews shall not replace us, it was a lot of neo-Nazis, and the president's response was there were good people on both sides. Mm-hmm. So he's just, it's just a mishmash of terrible policies, but the one consistent thing, and I think we've got to brace ourselves that it's going to be worse in the run-up to the presidential election, is his stoking of division and hate.
Well, it's stoking when So why are we talking about this morning as opposed to talking about the economy? Mm-hmm. As opposed to talking about the tariff, you know,
well,
of course we win,
things.
You know, tariff wars are great because, you know, those are easy to win, except you have more foreclosures now on farms. And, you know, we really have a food production issue, not only in the United States, but in the mm-hmm. world, right?
Globally.
Yeah. And so here we have an economy. We have the Dow taking the biggest hit that it's taken this year, right? And what are we talking about today? We're talking exactly about the issues that this president wanted us to talk about because he created it.
It's distraction. Yeah. It's distraction. I mean, the fact, for example, that all over the world bee species are plummeting and all these bees are needed to make sure our crops grow, people are not paying attention to that. Instead, you have a man who's saying, put down the Constitution, walk away from the Constitution, and everybody is paying attention to his dog and pony show.
And this was a game show host. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a game show host who his best the best thing he's ever done as a businessman is lose money. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is the man that you have, whether it's, you know, truckers or suburban moms or whomever. It's the anxiety. It's the cultural anxiety that people are feeling. And they're willing to abandon all of the other issues in order to have their cultural anxieties addressed.
Abandon logic, quite frankly.
Abandon logic. Absolutely right.
I do think it's important, though, to talk about these issues.
Oh, yes. We can't ignore it.
It's important to talk about the issues to the extent that you know,
I'm taking this personally,
we understand that we understand what
we need a round table.
No, it's
back
important
off,
to
buddy.
Talk about these issues to the extent that we have to understand what is happening, right? But
all right, I gotta take a break.
Yeah,
so now just stop talking.
I'll take a breath. I'll take a breath. You take a break.
We'll be back right after this.
I'm hanging from the ceiling like a chandelier.
Mississippi Heat playing in the Linda tonight, thelinda.org for more information. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Judith Ank, Joe Bruchak, and David Soares. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let's go through the few that we have. Vincent writes, Trump's intrusion into the congressional visit to Israel is a crime against the Constitution and the independence of the Congress. Impeach now. All right. Hearing no pluses or minuses on that, I will move on to.
Well, okay, here's a plus or a minus. The only thing that will not change up to now is that the Senate isn't going to do a damn thing, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, you have Marco Rubio, you have some of the other guys saying the right things, that this is wrong to say that the president interferes and, you know, international relations, or that they can't go. But in fact, those guys aren't changing their votes, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. The day that it occurs that he has done something so horrific that their seats, their Senate seats, will be in danger, that's the day you ought to really be considering or doing impeachment.
I'm also very concerned with the singular focus on this particular president, as opposed to, you know, providing people with a real plan of how it is that we move our country forward.
Elizabeth Warren has a plan.
Oh boy, she has so many plans. But you know, at the end of the day, the Democratic Party has to offer, you know, Americans an alternative and stay focused on what it is they're going to do, as opposed to just continuing to stay focused on the messaging around.
Well, a viable alternative as well, yes. Something that makes sense to a broad coalition of people.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm looking at Elizabeth Warren right now. Judith, you know that she's now leading in Iowa among Democratic caucus goers. So that there certainly are an awful lot of frustrated Democrats who love what she's saying. But again, the issue becomes, as we're going to get into, I'm sure, whether or not she is the one who can beat Trump. And to me, there is nothing more important.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the number one priority needs to be defeating the incumbent president. However, right. I think there are many Democrats that can beat Trump. And I think this early in the process, we should not be cutting off all our options. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't think Biden can beat Trump.
Well, you've made that clear.
Mm-hmm. And every week it's, unfortunately, more pronounced. I mean, there was a report yesterday that some of his supporters are urging Vice President Biden not to do so many. He's been quite limited. He's not all over the public stage, but they're urging him not to do more public events so he doesn't have more gaffes. I mean, you cannot mm-hmm. run for president if a year and a half out your advisors are telling you not to be out there doing public events. That's just not workable.
Ever heard of Donald Trump? All the gaffes he made, it was unbelievable. And yet still he kept going.
Well, I think it was on purpose on his part.
I don't think it's on purpose. That man, I mean, mm-hmm.
no, but
listen to 2 minutes of his ramblings and you tell me whether or not his gaffes are on purpose. He goes
it's
from
who
one.
It's who he is.
It's who he is. And people fell in love with the celebrity. People fell in love with the brashness. It was so refreshing. And he's managed to achieve nothing. He's managed to literally destroy what took hundreds of years to build. And so when we're talking about, you know, the person who's going to come along and take on the damage that he has left and move, you know, the country forward, I agree with you. Look, we need people who have great ideas, who have realistic plans, you know, not aspirational, but things that can be moved on immediately, given the climate in our Congress, right? And someone who's going to inspire people. Mm-hmm. And the question is, who is that person now? You know, Joe Biden. I don't think anyone has sat back and said, "Okay, this guy is." We know who he is. He's been with us our entire lives, right? We know the gaffes. You can expect it. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly. I didn't understand why he was doing so much publicly, because every time others would put out a lot of information and invest a lot of resources in getting their message across, the numbers in the polls didn't change. He was still, right. you know, a top. The only thing he could do by injecting himself was to, you know, create opportunities for him to publicize more of his gaffes. So why do that?
Well, because you have to campaign. I mean, I think Biden's numbers are strong. Biden's numbers go up when
That's right.
President Trump is worse than usual, which I know is a low bar. So I take your point, David. I mean, he could just, you know, go to the Delaware shore for the end of the summer. And if for instance, the news of the day, if the president is not allowing elected members of Congress to travel to other countries, that helps Biden in the polls.
Biden's to me, you know, I wouldn't be advising Joe Biden to stay home so he's not out there engaging in more, you know, gaffes. I would be more concerned about the fact that the void that he leaves when he's not on that stage is giving an opportunity to Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris,
Don't
who just
worry
seems
about
to
that.
Be.
Well, That's
what,
a
no.
good thing.
What I'm saying is if you're advising this
right.
particular candidate, because I do like the fact that what I've seen over the last, you know, 6 weeks is just other candidates, you know, rising above, I think, even though the expectations that the media has set upon those individuals, and they're doing very well.
Well, to those expectations of the media, the expectations are that Biden is going to make more gas. And it seems that every time he goes out, they're just laying in wait. And I don't think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just the gaffes, though. I mean, the gaffes can be cringe-inducing. They're not, you know, important to me.
But
it's the policies that he's embracing.
Yeah, I mean, and
like
that's
what like what, Judith?
Like climate change. I mean, he, you know, when he was really drilled for the first time in a serious way on climate change, he says he's going to find a middle ground. And the only thing he really offered up in the debates was rejoining the Paris Accords. I mean, it's very dated, and it's not enough to actually affect the emission reductions that we need.
The climate change issue is one that is incredibly volatile for a Democrat right now, because it's a moving target, right? I mean, it just seems that whatever we know about the climate right now,
it keeps getting worse.
It just keeps getting worse. And
right.
So what you propose in August is really, you know, not the solution when you hear about more of the findings come September or October.
But almost every Democratic candidate has been keeping up with that.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not Hickenlooper, who was so pro-fracking, but he's in our rearview mirror now. But the major Democratic candidates have been staying current. They've been not accepting fossil fuel donations.
Which candidate?
All of them.
You said
Hickenlooper is out.
Is that?
From Colorado.
Can you do me a favor? Could you say fracking Lip and Hooper together?
Fracking Hickenlooper?
That's a great word, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, I'm concerned that the Democratic left is going to eat their own. And Judith, with all great respect to you, because there's nobody I admire more than you.
Yeah.
I think you're a good example of it. I mean, you know, if in fact there isn't an ability to get together and to say, all right, we're going to criticize Trump, all of us, for whatever he's doing, including the horror that he's doing to the environment. If these attacks go on, it's just an open invitation for Trump to win. I think it's that simple.
So are we not supposed to have spirited debates about policy issues in the Democratic primary?
I think we should have spirited debates. My concern, I think I share the same concern as Alan, is, you know, the right had the Tea Party. You know, what do we have? You know, we have the purists as well.
It's not being aspirational. You look at the climate change issue, we are running out of time.
I understand
and
that.
And 1980s policies don't work today.
The question is, are you going to let the perfect be the enemy of the good? And I think that's where... That's where the line is going to be for Democrats.
I think virtually every Democrat, including those on the left, will turn out and vote against Trump.
It's not going to be like the last time.
Why
do you say that?
Because we've had 4 years of Trump, and people, you know, the Bernie bros who weren't thrilled with Hillary, they are now seeing the serious implications of not showing up to vote. I think the key is finding people who didn't vote beyond the small sliver of people who are not excited about Hillary, but finding people who don't vote, finding people who, let's give Trump a chance. You know, he's unconventional. He's going to drain the swamp. Those are the people we need to reach. And to reach those people, you need to talk about health care. You need to talk about student loan reform. You need to talk about climate change.
I believe to this day that the reason that the House of Representatives went Democratic is because people are fed up with Trump as a human being.
Yep.
And let me tell you, Judith, I am getting a good deal of mail from people who say they'll never vote for Biden. So that you can say everybody will, but I'm telling you, there is evidence that everybody won't.
Well, we have to convince them otherwise. They're not going to vote for Biden in the primary. They're also saying they're not going to vote for Biden in the general.
You bet. I will never vote for Biden.
Then who are they going to vote
If they vote for no one, then Trump wins.
There was progressive arrogance in the last time around, and this is what I mean by that. Because even the people who stayed home said, I can't just vote for Hillary. They just thought that she was going to win.
Right.
Because it was like, well, it's impossible that this guy could possibly win, because look what he does and look what he says. And I think that if we go into this campaign believing the same thing, right, he walks in again. And we have 4 more years.
Yeah, democracies do not run on assumptions.
And right now it looks like he's
voting.
Yeah.
And right now it does look like he could walk in again.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll let everybody sort of cool down.
Go back to the Adirondacks and canoe.
As if we just had some lovely soothing flute music played by Blue Shack.
Hey.
There we go.
That's great.
We'll be back in a moment. right, here are the letters. They go something like this. Diane says, I agree that Biden cannot beat Trump. I would vote for Mickey Mouse at this point if I am sure he can beat Trump. Harris or Warren, in my opinion, have the best chance of ousting Trump. If he's even willing to go, even if not reelected, he is one scary individual. Thanks for the great program. We have...
And the evidence that Harris or Warren can do this is what?
Yesterday's Fox poll. A Fox poll had five Democrats significantly beating Trump.
All right, that's
Judith
Fox.
Quoting Fox. I just I was here to hear it.
Dogs are marrying cats.
And there are
it's
other
raining frogs.
There are other polls. There are other polls. Now Biden is like one or two points up from Warren, but the top five Democratic candidates beat Trump on a Fox poll.
Elliot writes, she appeals to a part of the activist Democratic Party, but she has a charisma gap. This is Elizabeth Warren. When it comes to the broader public, Americans do not give a damn about policy. If they did, we would be reviewing President Dukakis from a historical perspective. Sorry, Judith, but you need to bridge the gap between where we need to go and where the broad swath of the public resides.
A charisma gap is no reason not to vote for a candidate who is smart and capable and who can beat Donald Trump.
The last one is the last point is the key point. Smart and capable, there's no question that both Harris and Warren are smart and capable. Whether they can beat Donald Trump, that's the issue.
Deborah says, David is right on Joe Biden. We have known him our whole lives and know what to expect. His gaffes are rarely substantive, and he really does know what he's talking about, unlike Trump, which change policy, markets, and people's actions. Judith, I appreciate your opinion, but can't agree. I think Biden will step up on climate change and get us back on a trajectory of human and American progress. That from Debbie. We got this one from Scott, who says this is about Representative Tlaib. I thought Trump wanted her to go back to her country.
Yes.
That's, that's actually great.
That's a good one.
Good point. All right. So, you know, you're playing Monopoly and you roll the dice and you land on Baltic Avenue and you buy it. And then you roll again and you get on St. James Place and you can buy it, or you can put it up for auction or whatever. Mm-hmm. So now apparently the president has landed on Greenland and wants to buy it.
Why stop there? What about the Falkland Islands, Orkney Islands? You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of islands out there, and most of them are going to be underwater thanks to climate change.
No, he wants to stay up north. Remember, Nordic.
That's right. We want
countries.
Nordic people.
So now, for what it's worth, Greenland says it's not for sale. They don't really want to be bought, but we're not for sale. But President Trump has asked aides about buying Greenland, and they are very interested in the fact because apparently the president is interested in the fact because of the opportunities. You can read whatever you want into
oil.
The opportunities that are there as a result of climate change that would be there, and to buy Greenland. It's hard to say this with a straight face, and yet it is a true story.
Well, Greenland is a fearful place, a land that's never green, where there's ice and snow and the whale fishes go, and daylight is seldom seen. And it's also primarily Inuit people who live there.
This is like right out of the comic books, man. The Lex Luthor wants to melt the polar caps and then go out and see what's underneath it and buy it and drill. It's terrible.
Having been to that part of the world and having seen what is there, if there is that kind of change, life is going to be untenable for the native people of that part of the world. And it's not a joke. Right. It's not a joke at all. I know we laugh, and it's good that we laugh, but we have to consider what the future means and think about generations, not just presidencies.
You mean to tell me that Donald Trump doesn't respect the natives?
And here we are on the air. Here we are on the air. When all else fails, distract. And that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's a big distraction.
Greenland just needs to build that wall.
But it's hard. I think it's hard to not talk about or to at least address the fact that a portion of the president's day, executive time, is spent thinking about buying Greenland.
Yes. Well, he's putting that out there so that we're not talking about his other international foreign policy.
The imploding
gaps
of the stock market, like, is being ignored.
Well, the imploding of the stock market, but what we're seeing in Hong Kong, the fact mm-hmm. that he can't seem to, you know, abandon his tariff, you know, dialogue right now to even engage on the humanitarian mm-hmm. and democratic, you know, virtues that I think are being expressed right now by the citizens of Hong mm-hmm. Kong. He doesn't want that to be a story that we're talking about. So let's go buy Greenland.
You bet. That's
although that's every day of the Trump presidency is the distraction and the media trying to figure out what's news, what do they have to cover in depth versus can they cover the real issues of the day. You know, Eisenhower did add Alaska as a state, and I think that's what is motivating the president. As illogical as this is, I think we need to buckle up as we get closer to the election, and especially if he thinks he is not going to prevail, he's going to be looking for some bizarro legacy pieces.
He didn't buy it, by the way.
Seward bought it. He made it a state. You're right.
It was a territory of the United States before.
And how about taking care of Puerto Rico? That is a territory of the United States.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to raise just one final point about, you know, foreign policy here. And that is this. We see China in turmoil right now. Mm-hmm. We mm-hmm. just had North Korea testing missiles again, mm-hmm. right? Which would have been front page news in every mm-hmm. single paper in the world.
And the Russian nuclear missile accident.
Yes.
Kind of big.
Exactly, right?
And
Vladimir.
Well, the Iran story of the tank and mm-hmm. the, I mean, that.
Yeah, trying to take that oil tanker, which was being held at Gibraltar. People aren't talking about that.
We have Pakistan and India.
Yes.
Fighting over cash.
And
you
India saying that for now we're not going to be the first strike, but for now we're not planning on a first strike is one of the most chilling things I've heard in the last week.
The retreat from the nuclear arms treaty with Russia, right? Mm-hmm. The South Korea feeling a sense of abandonment and having to deal with the threat to their borders, mm-hmm. right? And they're
the Paris Accord. The Paris Accords.
But you mm-hmm. now have countries that are expressing a desire to defend themselves, which means if they're going to defend themselves, it means nuclear weaponry, which means nuclear proliferation, which means mm-hmm. turning the page back on all of the progress that we've made in the last 20 years. And so all of this, you know, I want to buy Greenland. Oh, okay. The world is literally on fire right now. Mm-hmm. And the next, you know, president of the United States has to come back and begin to establish those multilateral relationships again in order to quell that.
Mm-hmm. And unless it happens, consider what the future will be. Not for us, not even for our children, but as I said earlier, generations to come. We think in terms of seven generations of Native culture. Let's try thinking that way about a few more things.
I agree.
I'm so impressed with you, Joe, because anybody who can quote the Weavers in a whole stanza of a song just really has my vote.
I'm just going to look to Ray Graff for some hope here.
You know, I think we all look to Ray Graff for hope. Speaking of hope, let's hear some music play us out, and we'll go into Ray and the news, and we'll be back with our conversation after this. Well, while you were all listening to the news and taking breaks and things, well, Dan wrote us a letter and he said, I love you, panel, but honestly, sometimes you sound overwhelmingly whiny about Trump. Yes, he's bad for our country, but time and energy are limited, and more of your time might be better spent educating your listeners about how they can achieve a better future for themselves and our country. Remember, some of your listeners could be fence-walking Trump supporters. Take this opportunity to provide them with information that might change their mind. That in a note with a subject heading, "The Sky is Falling."
You know, the thing about that is that it is true. I was once invited on one of these radio stations that had suddenly become radical right-wing talk radio. I was told not to talk. Well, sorry. I won't say where. I was said, don't go. Don't do it. And I said, no, I'll just go and be myself. I'll talk to him as a person. And by the end of the show, we were having a real conversation. So I think it is true. We do need to converse and respect everybody, even if we think their point of view is insane. We still have to treat them as human beings.
You can't have it both ways. You can't say we have to treat them as human beings even if their point of view is insane.
But they are human beings, Alan.
Well, they are, but insane is a very interesting word.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Dan. Yo, man, that was real talk. That he's right. You know, he is right. That's
Who's
real
right?
talk. Dan, the last writer.
Yeah, what Dan said was good.
To me, sometimes I feel like I do a disservice because I'm here and I'm just venting because, you know, this is the place to do it. But I don't know that I'm necessarily providing anything more that people can take away and say, okay.
But don't you think information is good? Don't you think the fact
Greenland.
By you just earlier saying that it's a distraction. I mean, I think those are things that are important for people to realize. And sometimes I'm not saying we have all the answers all the time. But what I am saying is that by discussing it and by looking at it and having various viewpoints, that we try to balance all of this stuff out, and hopefully that is an education.
Well, you know, in Native tradition, we say there is the good mind and there is the twisted mind. And sometimes when someone is in the twisted mind, they need to be shown the way to untwist, to find that straight mind, to begin to think clearly again. And there are people who definitely are saying things that make no sense, that are not sane, and yet sometimes, not always, we can get through to them through kindness, through logic, and through sense. And not always, I know, Alan, not always.
But this is the worst president in modern history, certainly.
No doubt.
By far.
No doubt.
And the most dangerous.
No doubt.
I mean, if you follow the bouncing ball, you're going to end up with a totalitarian state. This guy, who loves Duterte and all the other strong men around the world, admires parades mm-hmm. and militarism and the rest of it. Yeah, this is the time to get tough. And and no apologies from me, that's for sure.
But I think the letter writer agrees with that, and he is mm-hmm. suggesting that we've got to find constructive ways to win over previous Trump voters or non-voters so they don't vote for Trump again. And there are different ways of doing it.
Look, we live in a time now where it seems like we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Like if we're complaining about something, we seem like we can't do both.
I miss Jerry Ford.
We can educate. We can speak to one another. We can learn from one another, but we can also provide, you know, the helpful. Look, the reality is people have to get out and vote, right? People have to get out and vote.
And get others to vote.
And you can't be voting on singular issues. You know, I know that there are people that voted for this president because of what they believed he could do in transforming the Supreme Court. Yeah. But is that enough when you have the atrocities that are happening on the southern border? Is that enough when we continue to see the erosion of laws that are designed to protect women on college campuses? Is that enough when, you know, we seem to be destroying our farming community in this nation?
Mm-hmm. Now, don't forget to add to the list of atrocities, and this will definitely count as whining for the letter writer, but a few days ago, the U.S. Department of Labor put out a proposed rule that federal contractors can, in fact, discriminate against LGBT people and also pregnant women
mm-hmm.
If they feel that violates their religious convictions. I think it's those kind of those policies that don't get a massive amount of coverage are the ones that are damaging the country
but
as
I think,
well.
I think that's the problem, is that it's that we look at that is that it's whining, and it's not whining, it's the truth, and people should know that. Yeah. I'm right?
That's
I mean,
right.
I,
that's right. Look, this is look for all the goo goo foo foos.
Thank you for that.
Is that a fashion line?
No, yeah. It's a band we're going to play next week. Actually, the goo goo foo foos.
They're at the Linda.
Yeah. We have to understand how dangerous this president is. Yeah. And this election will be won or lost by turnout. Mm-hmm. Turnout in the black community, turnout in the Asian community, turnout in the Jewish community. There's no question that that's the way elections are won or lost.
White women.
That's right. And if, in fact, we're going around saying, we have to be nice to everyone, goo-goo-foo-foo, and not understand how tough this where we are at this point in history, then I think we've lost it all.
Yeah, I mean, look at what's happening in the EPA, the Endangered Species Act, all of these things people are not paying enough attention to.
You bet.
Chuck wrote and said, Americans don't show up to vote against anyone. People go to the polls to support candidates they are excited about. That's mm-hmm. how Trump won. His mm-hmm. base was excited. Democrats were not excited by Hillary. Trump's base is still excited. To win, the Democrats need to find an exciting, inspirational candidate.
And who's the guy on the television who used to go, wrong? The reason...
John McLaughlin. Wrong!
Yeah. Yes, wrong. Go ahead. The reason it was wrong is the reason the House of Representatives just went Democratic is people were voting against somebody.
Well, remember,
and that somebody was Donald Trump.
But remember, there is a Democratic base. We talk a lot about Trump appealing to his base. Well, Democrats have a base, too. And they were very active in the last congressional election.
Well, yes.
I think every... respectful American needs to show up and vote against Trump. But I think people are going to, if they're excited about the candidate, they'll volunteer, they'll go mm-hmm. to swing states, they'll give money, they'll organize. They won't just show up.
That was only first base, though. We haven't gotten a home run yet.
Yeah, but I don't. I just want to go back to the whole thing about Democrats not being excited about a candidate. I think it was an embarrassment of riches. We had two great candidates, and we were excited about mm-hmm. both. The problem is after one won the nomination, we stopped being excited, and we just didn't, you know, move the ball forward. But so we have to show up and do our job, and it's not just a matter of getting this man out. It's a matter of saving, you know, our democracy and saving
the planet.
The planet, really.
Nicholas writes and says, when discussing the general election in 2020, the panel seems to continue to ignore an important point in general conversation. Should the Democrats vote against Trump? Yes. Do we want them to come out rather than stay home? Yes. But the most salient issue is, where do these Democrats live? If a Massachusetts or New York Democrat is against Biden and refuses to vote in the general in 2020, so what? The DNC must concentrate on the Democrats and independents who live in Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Texas. Aspirational.
We still have an electoral college to consider. The electoral college can make the difference, as it did in this last election and another certain election, where we have to make sure we have that broad consensus on the part of Democrats and not just the big states in the Northeast.
And there's something called theft. It has happened in Florida a couple of times now. Mm-hmm. Elections have been stolen. I'm not talking about the electoral college, which, of course, comes into play. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about stealing. I'm talking about hanging chads. I'm talking about mm-hmm. the fact that Al Gore did not contest when he should have in that election.
The Supreme Court made the decision who would be
Absolutely.
President.
I like this letter. Jared in Albany here. Does anybody know if it would be legal for someone like me to move to a swing state for a month during election season? You know, just so my vote counts against this bozo incumbent.
You have to look at the state, Judith?
You have to look at the state laws,
which say who and how long it is before you
residency
before you have to.
Yeah, you have to often be there a year or more, register
residency.
In a party. There are residency requirements. However, Jared, you can go to a swing state and volunteer and make phone calls and organize, as opposed to casting one vote. So
mm-hmm. sure.
I'll see you in Pennsylvania.
If you recall, when we were
where I always go before presidential elections. I take a group of friends, and we go to Pennsylvania, and we work really hard all day, and then we have fun in the evening.
I have a friend in Ohio right now. Go ahead.
Does anybody ever stop you, Judith, and say, by the way, where are you from?
Well, I go out of my way to say I'm a volunteer from upstate New York, and I feel so strongly about this campaign that I've come here, and we go and door to door the old-fashioned
way. That's great. That's really great.
When we were sitting here shortly after the, you know, results of the election, I mean, and people were, you know, disappointed, right? Heartfelt disappointment.
Disappointed.
Well, my concern from
melting. The in their bodies. Go ahead.
My concern was, could we as a Democratic Party look to pass legislation that would appeal to those states, right, that are suffering right now? You know, and I think that legislation would have come in the form of our highways, building an infrastructure bill, right?
Infrastructure week, right?
So the question now is, can we go into those states? Can we go into Michigan? You know, can we go into
Texas?
Can we go to Texas? Can we go to Ohio, and provide for those people who didn't vote for Democratic the last time? Can we provide them with a vision, and will they believe enough in that vision to turn around and vote, you know, inconsistently with what they did in 2016? That's the challenge.
The bigger challenge is Democrats can't go in and say, I delivered A, B, and C, because Mitch McConnell blocked virtually everything that was good in the Senate. So people will be asked to kind of trust and vote on the vision as opposed to the actual accomplishment. I've been doing some work this past week, even though I was on vacation in the Adirondacks, on following the Newark, New Jersey drinking water crisis with lead, similar to Flint, Michigan. There's a big part in Newark where people are being told not to drink their water. Imagine if we had an infrastructure package that included replacing all the lead service lines in cities so people didn't have to stand in line for clean drinking water.
Ted Wrightson says there was a drought and crop failure in eastern Syria, which caused the rural population to move to the cities, which destabilized the status quo, ignited tensions and civil war, which caused the huge migration of the people into Europe, giving rise to reactionary nationalist policies, Brexit, and finally Donald Trump in America. This is the face of climate change we are now living in. Worse is yet to come.
Just look at National Geographic, which recently had an article focusing on the fact that we have the largest number of migrants in the world at any time in history, that people are moving out of their countries. And much of this has to do, as he rightly said, with climate change disasters. And Syria is a case in point.
In Honduras and Guatemala, there's been a fivefold increase in migrants leaving those countries as weather conditions have worsened there.
It's always going to be famine, violence, and environment. Those are the three things that are going to cause people to leave their homes and venture somewhere else looking for opportunity.
And in the Middle East, a lot of the tension is over water.
Oh, yes.
Meanwhile, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced that the global average temperature last month was 62.1 degrees Fahrenheit. The U.S. government scientists on Thursday confirmed that July was the hottest month on record, edging out the previous record holder, July 2016.
Whoopee!
What do we make of that?
Well, it's getting worse, and states are trying to do what they can. Some businesses are stepping up, but the federal government, I mean, we know what needs to happen, and they're literally going in the opposite direction. This morning in the New York Post, EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler actually had an op-ed chastising Governor Cuomo for standing in the way of fossil fuel development projects in New York. Andrew Wheeler, by the way, who used to be a coal industry lobbyist, is probably rehearsing to now be a gas lobbyist when he leaves the EPA. But we're drilling on public land. We're pulling out of any kind of sensible science around this. This is really serious. The UN last year told us we had 11 years to take action to avoid catastrophic climate change. The longer we wait, the harder the fix is going to be.
Well, let's remember the Koch brothers and how much their lives depend upon their livelihoods, that long-term plan they've made for maintaining a dependence on fossil fuels. And that these are smart people, unfortunately, who are doing everything they can to destroy the future for us. If you look at the things that have happened in Canada with tar sands, I'm very aware of that because of how it's impacted our indigenous people up there. And we're just ignoring the results of fracking, which is being done everywhere now. So now we're a huge oil exporter at a time when we should turn away from oil, away from natural gas, and look towards sustainable forms of energy.
And Tuesday, earlier this week, the president traveled to Pennsylvania to visit a Shell facility that is using a byproduct of fracked gas to make single-use plastic packaging. I mean, because I think the fossil fuel industry and the petrochemical industry sees that we're moving toward clean, renewable electricity forms and more efficient transportation, so they're looking at plastic as their replacement market.
You know, we are blessed to have you here on Friday, Judith, and I wish we could have you here every day. But we did earlier in the week talk about Trump straws. And I have the Donald Trump store up on my computer now. Trump straws, a pack of 10. Liberal paper straws don't work. Stand with President Trump and buy your pack of recyclable straws today. These are plastic. They are BPA free. They are reusable and recyclable, 9 inches long, laser engraved with Trump on them. And
it doesn't say Trump sucks.
No, that.
You stole that. I was going.
Darn.
There.
Pack of 10 identical straws as shown for, and you can buy 10 straws for $15.
Trump straws, because you too can suck. That's where I was going.
Well, there actually was a piece in the Washington Post that Trump is looking at the straw issue as one of these cultural divide issues.
It's a straw poll.
Right. I don't think it's going to work on this because lots of Republicans and conservatives.
What you're saying is this is the final straw?
Yes, this is the final straw.
This isn't going to end.
Let's just end this.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to put a moratorium
thanks,
on
Joe.
All of this. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. And we're going to talk about it tomorrow. I will be in Pittsfield.
She's the master of the plug. For
an environmental symposium. There's this great play called Fall Springs that you've reviewed here on WAMC. It's a comedy about fracking, and it's a musical. So that's at the main stage. And I'm so grateful that the Barrington Stage Company has pulled together an environmental symposium. I'll be speaking there along with local environmental leaders in the Berkshires, and that's tomorrow at 2 o'clock at 30 Union Street, Pittsfield, free and open to the public.
David, you and me, let's have a working lunch today. We'll write a musical comedy about buying Greenland.
Greenland.
Greenlandia.
Greenlandia. Excellent.
Oh, my. Well, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. I'm going to let Joe have some time for food. Do you have anything to promote, Joe? Anything going on in your
Not
world?
Not until September 22nd. That's the Saratoga Native American Festival in Congress Park in Saratoga Springs.
We'll have you on before then, and you can plug the hell out of it then.
Oh,
excellent.
You
got anything, David?
Oh, I just have one little thing here. We have we've started a program called Court Visions Academy at the TCCE here in West Hill. We want to create safe spaces for young people and their families on Friday nights. We have space for 100. We have probably 30 at this point. We need more kids. So if you're a mom, dad, anybody who has children, you're in these communities and you want a safe place to go from 5:30 to about 9 o'clock, get some food, learn how to play games and be around friends, we're open.
Twister?
Alan, anything you want to announce?
No, I have nothing to announce.
Okay, nor do I. So we will turn it over to Joe Bruschek, and I thank you all for being here. Have a beautiful weekend.
For the children.